Today, names you find on an Iowa map on Scribble.
Welcome to Scribble, 30 minutes of conversation, comments, and reviews on reading and writing, editing, publishing, and selling books. I'm Roald Tweet.
And I'm Don Wooten. Frederick Beecher has been researching place names in Iowa. We'll ask him what he found on Scribble. Whatever prompted you to start researching names in Iowa?
I was a salesman on the road, and driving down Interstate 80, I kept going by a town called What Cheer. And it got me. And I drove off the road one Friday afternoon to What Cheer, Iowa, to find out how it got its name.
And that began it, huh?
And that began it.
And what? How did it begin its name?
They told me that the farms around there were farmed primarily by German people, and they found coal. But they weren't coal miners, so they went to Wales and got some Welshmen to come over to mine their coal for them. They did strip mining. And the Welshmen had kind of an expression. They said, "Whatcher." And what it meant was, it's kind of like aloha. It meant hello and goodbye, okay, and how are you. Mm-hmm. And the whatcher turned into what cheer. And that's how that happened.
Yeah, I've heard of the French names being corrupted into English. My favorite was Smackover, which was from the French Chemin Couvert, or covered bridge. Right. Yes. And we changed it to Smackover.
Smackover. Yeah.
Great name down in Arkansas, I think. Yes. Well, then how do you do your research on this? You don't drive into these towns all over.
No. Once in a while when we take a little vacation. But no, it's usually done on your computer or telephone, and you call City Hall or you call the Chamber of Commerce and say, how'd your town get its name? And they'll tell you more than you wanted to know. They'll send you volumes of stuff on their town, of course.
Uh-huh.
And it's done that way. And I have a granddaughter that's at UNI, and she and I are doing it now. I started, and now she's helping me. And
how far do you have to go?
We're going to do all of them if we can.
Every town? Or
every town in Iowa.
And you do geography features, too, rivers? And
well, the way we've been doing it, we got a zip code book,
okay,
from the post office, and we're going by zip codes. But then we found there's a lot of these little dinky towns that don't have zip codes, that are in somebody else's zip code. So that's what we're doing now is
ferreting out the smallest towns.
Huh? Yeah, there's about I don't know. I think we're up to 700-800 towns, but I think there's over 2,000 towns in Iowa.
This is going to be a big book.
It's going to be a coffee table book.
Right. So are there going to be pictures of the towns then?
I haven't yet, no.
But will you for the book?
I'd like to,
yeah.
Yes. I think one of the more interesting ones happened right here in Scott County, Iowa. We found out that Argo, I don't know if you, do you know where Argo is? Argo,
yeah.
Corners?
Yeah.
Well, it got its name kind of a strange way. And right here close to us, they said many years ago the railroad was coming through, and they thought the railroad was going to go through that area. All that was out there at that time was a schoolhouse, church, four or five farmhouses, and a country store. Well, they had to incorporate the town. They didn't have a town, so they were ready to incorporate it. So one night, they all got into the country store and decided what they were going to name their town, because the railroad was coming through. And everybody put a name in a hat. They pulled out the names, and there was one Argo. and they decided there wasn't an Argo, Iowa. Started with an A. We'll name it Argo. Uh-huh. So after the meeting was over, they said, well, who named it Argo? And this farmer said, well, I did. And they said, well, would you name it after Jason Ship? He sailed around in the Argo. He says, nope, named it right off that box. So we have a town in Iowa named for a box of cornstarch.
I imagine you find a lot of stories like that.
Yes.
What among your most interesting bits of research have you come up with?
Well, I think it's all interesting. I found out that Bettendorf had three names in its existence.
Uh-huh.
It was named Lilienthal first.
Lilienthal?
Lilienthal was the first name for Bettendorf.
Uh-huh.
Let's see, what was the second name?
It's a little onion-growing town. Gilbert. Yeah, was it Gilbert?
Big part, Gilbertville.
Gilbertville,
yes,
yeah.
It was Gilbertville, and then Bettendorf.
Uh-huh.
And, but I thought that was going back.
The fascinating thing is how names have bicycled around this community.
Oh, yes.
Because Rock Island was going to be named Davenport.
Oh, uh-huh.
And then somebody in the legislature decided he didn't like Davenport because of some snide comments he'd made, and so they named it Stevenson instead.
Uh-huh.
And nobody liked that, so later on, Rock Island.
And well, not only that, Stevenson was Secretary of State, I think, and he was caught with his hand, like many Illinois politicians, caught with his hand in the till. So Stevenson got to be not a very good name, so that's when they changed it to Rock Island. Well, yeah, I mean, every little town has some really interesting stories.
Yes, they do. So many of them were named after someone that had something to do with railroads.
Yeah.
They were named after who the railroad engineer was that came through, or a lot of them had railroad connections.
Yeah, I found that too, that railroads had a powerful impact
on town names. Uh-huh.
And there's so many of them around here, but you know, what's his name? Antoine LeClaire felt bad for Davenport, so the town he was setting up, he decided to name it Davenport instead of LeClaire.
Yeah.
And it just goes around. Moline used to be Rock Island Mills, and
wasn't that the French word for mill town?
Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah. French word, Moulin, and became Moline.
Yeah.
But how much time do you spend on this, Frederick?
Well, not as much as I'd like to. My helper, I'm 90 years old now.
Well, join the club.
Yeah.
So am I.
You guys should get together.
Yeah.
And I enjoy doing it, but my helper's at UNI, granddaughter that helps me. And my wife, we're retired, I do other things too. So,
but that's how do you spend your time?
I'm
looking for ideas here.
Okay, a lot of it is spent in stores where I can find old records.
Oh,
I like old Bluebirds.
Yeah.
Uh huh. And 78s. And I'm recording, for posterity, swing music that I played when I was a young man.
You said your father was a musician.
Yes, he played, started with Glenn Gray, his orchestra, and he was the drummer.
Really?
And he started when they started, and then it was known as Spike's Jazz Band, which a few years later happened to be, Georgia Peach Band. Then they went up to Canada and played at a big hotel resort up there called the Casa Loma. And so Glenn changed the name. His real name was Glenn Knobloch.
Uh-huh.
And his mother's name was Gray. So they changed it to Glenn Gray. And they were up there for about 3 years playing at this place and became a big band.
Yeah, Glenn Gray and his Casa Loma Orchestra.
Yep.
And reading about big bands, the general consensus, as somebody said, it was the most together band that they knew of.
Yes. My dad quit believe it or not, they played 101 one-nighters.
Whoa.
My dad quit and went to college and got another job. But so anyway, when I was, I think I was in eighth grade, and my dad said to me, he said, "I want you to play an instrument. What do you want to play?" I said, "Well, I want to play a trumpet. I heard Big Spiderbeck play. I heard him play In the Mist, and I want to do that." So he bought me a trumpet and hired a guy to teach me how to play. And the guy came to my dad finally and says, "He's never going to be a trumpet player." He says, "Why not?" He said, "He got too big lips. Get him a trombone." So they got me a trombone. And I thought afterwards, you know, Louis Armstrong got bigger lips than me, and he's a hot trumpet player, boy. What's this guy talking about? But anyway, I learned to play the trombone, and I was, I think I was in eighth grade during World War II.
Yeah, that's familiar territory for me.
Yeah, and there was a dance band in the area, and they lost a trombone player. And they came to my dad. The guy put my teacher put him on to my dad. And he said, "Could I play?" Because everybody was going to war. All these young musicians were getting drafted. And my mother said no. My dad said, "Yeah, let him go." So I played with. I was in eighth grade and played in a dance band in the Chicago area. And learned about life, and made $50 a week in the eighth grade.
And that was pretty good money then.
Yes, it was. We played three nights a week. We played for anything we could play for, bar mitzvahs and whatever. And
I think you've got a memoir on your hands here. You need to sit down and write this all up.
Well, and I got really interested in swing music. Of course, that's what we play.
Right.
You know, in the mood. And,
right.
Yeah.
Hell yeah. And
yeah, that's a.
So I collect it. I collect all the old ones, and I put them on CDs, and I've got about 1,000 records.
Wow. Yeah, that's...
So I do that, and then I write a little.
And, what else do you write besides this?
Some short stories and some observations of life.
Oh.
I had quite... I think Molly thinks I had quite a different life.
Have you published any of them?
I did a long time ago. I had a couple in a book called Guideposts.
Oh, yeah.
And I had a couple in Reader's Digest a long time
ago. Did you really?
Little articles about
well, you've got a good
observations. And
You've got a good background in writing then.
Yeah.
But how do you handle writing about town names? I mean, you just... put the town name and write a little explanation, or do you expand it, or what?
The town name and the county that it's in. I'm not putting the population in because that varies so much.
Yeah.
Then just how it got its name. And
it's kind of like an index.
Yeah, Yeah, it can't be very much because there's so many towns.
Are there many Indian names?
Oh, tons of them in Iowa. Just tons of them. Maquoketa, I found out, was named, it's an Indian word meaning place of the big bear. And they said many years ago that we had bears and buffaloes in Iowa, and there are some caves up by Maquoketa.
Right.
And that they had a good-sized bear lived in one of those caves, and the Indians knew it, and they bypassed it, and they call it the place of the big bear, Maquoketa.
Yeah, there. You know, we hear a lot of names, and we're not sure where they came from.
Yeah.
One of the things that I found interesting is that Oregon, the origin of the name Oregon, they looked for that. They thought maybe it was an Irishman or Reagan and something.
Right. Uh-huh.
It comes from Wisconsin.
Oh,
Wisconsin. The name for Wisconsin is Wisconsin. Wisconsin. And they put it on a map, Wisconsin-hyphenated, put the sign below, and Wisconsin somehow migrated to Oregon, and that's at least what the map makers have discovered, that that's where it came from. You must have that thrill of discovery all the time.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What things have really surprised you?
The first thing is how many towns there really are in Iowa. Yeah. Places that are very, very few people. An Iowa map from the state actually has an index on it that tells you all the names of these towns and their populations, and they go all the way down. There might be 18 people in the town, and Iowa has that on their map. Now, I looked at Illinois' map, and they cut it off at 250, I believe.
Right.
But there's somebody said to me one day, he said, when you get done with that, you better do Illinois. I said, oh, no, not Illinois.
So do
you got too many towns.
Do you do towns that no longer exist?
Yes. We try to.
Like Argo no longer exists, does it?
Yeah, it's still out there.
Oh, is it?
The general store's still there.
Oh, okay.
There's four or five houses out there. And yes, it's there. The general store's still open.
Yeah, there are some towns that are just consist of a few houses.
Yeah, and we have some towns that aren't there anymore, just a few buildings, some ghost towns, I guess. Up by Makoka, there's one out in the country that the town's still there, but nobody lives there.
What about Lost Nation, Iowa? How did that get its name?
I'm not up to the L's yet. Oh. I don't know.
Oh, you're going alphabetically?
Yeah, that's how I'm doing it.
Well, when you get there, I want to know.
Okay.
Because that's a really interesting name.
Yes, it is.
Well, Lone Tree is on there.
Lone Tree,
yeah. Lone Tree.
Sure.
And
Lone Tree. Morning Sun.
Morning Sun. Mm-hmm. Well, that should be just from the Morning Sun.
Sun.
Right? Uh-huh. And it's just amazing. I understand that in the Spanish-American War, that yielded a lot of county names in Iowa, mm-hmm. from places where battles were fought and so on. Mm-hmm. You wonder, how does a name get on the land, and how do you keep it on there?
Yeah.
Because many towns have gone through at least two names before they settled on one. Mm-hmm. And I wonder if there are people still trying to change names of towns.
I don't know. I'll bet there are, though.
Well, that could be. But the whole business of naming where you live, well, it's like your family name and so on. You'd like it to be settled.
Yes.
That I come from this place. Mm-hmm. But I must say, you've set yourself quite a task.
Well, I'll be gone by the time it's all finished. My granddaughter will finish it. But
have you gotten her assurance that she's going to follow through on this?
She told me she'd do it.
Well, okay, I'd have her sign a paper. Well, I applaud you for taking on such a monumental task.
It's fun. It's fun.
Yeah, I guess it is, but you must run up a lot of phone bills.
No, not too bad, not too bad. Mm-hmm. I do a lot of it I don't know how much time I buy, but I do it on the jitterbug, the little jitterbug phone.
Oh, yeah.
I can buy a lot of time on that.
Right.
Yeah. And
well, how much time do you spend on this? Do you work out every day or just?
Oh, no, no.
Just occasionally.
Whenever it occurs to me that I should do a little.
And, okay.
And then I do. And
well, I want to thank you for having it occur to you that you should talk to us, because
okay.
This is an interesting project. And if you're not going to last through it, I don't think I'll last long enough to read it. But keep going. We've been talking to Frederick Beecher, who is working on the names of Iowa. Names on the land, that is fascinating to me. Years ago, I did four TV programs on names on the land. And the first one started with major geography, the rivers and mountains and state names, then went to county names, and then to city names, and then to street names. Because here in Rock Island, we used to have beautiful street names, and they changed them all to numbers. I remember a writer talking about the Vandal Bird of Progress.
Yeah,
in Rock Island.
The whole city council in Rock Island in 1876 went to the Philadelphia Exposition, the anniversary of the U.S., and they discovered, you know, their streets were cherry, plum, and things like that in Rock Island. And they discovered in Philadelphia, which is a really nice Eastern, sophisticated city, that they all just had numbers. So they came back and said, we've got to be up to date. So they they did away with cherry plum and went First, Second, Third Avenue.
Oh, that's yeah. Well, Eagle was a big street name, and there was Indian Boundary Road, which is now 9th Avenue, I think, where I am. And I live on Broadway.
The Indian boundary line is our back boundary line of our house between us and Lincoln Park.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Goes right through the Augie campus.
Yeah, it's and then Dock Street is one block over, and fascinating old names here.
Yeah, but we got rid of them.
We certainly did. But the advantage is you can generally find your way around.
You can,
town.
Right, yeah.
But they have a mixture of names and numbers over in Iowa, Davenport and Bettendorf. What I love, I kid, whenever I have someone on from Bettendorf, I kid them about living in the town with pretentious street names. You know, some vistas, and you go up there, it's just a street. Nothing in particular, just a street.
I had to give a talk once at a house, I think it was to a PEO group, that lived in, that area of Bettendorf where all the streets are named Deer Something.
Oh.
You know, Antler and was one street, and Fawn was another street, and I could not find, because they all went tangled this way and that. And I just got so, finally I found the house, but it turns out it wasn't even on the map yet. It was so new. But every time I drive by that, I shudder thinking of that.
You know, when WHBF was sold, the new owner decided to throw out everything. Pictures, all the history, the rich history of WHBF, and that goes way back almost as far as WOC, and so much of that just lost. And among the things he threw out were all the files I had accumulated for my TV program Spectrum, which covered a broad range of things. And Pat Stout, who came to work here at WVIK, was in the news department there, and he filched the files for the What's in a Name program. So I still have them somewhere in the house. But that was a fascinating experience, and I can understand why Frederick Beecher is spending his 90s going through what seems like an insurmountable task.
Got to be a fun way of spending your spare time.
It is. It is. And you run into arguments about how the town name was. Alito was supposed to be pulling names out of a hat, and somebody hotly contests that's not true.
But has no other explanation either.
No. Sebula, I think a woman thought they should name it. They decided there was sand there, so Latin for sand was sabulum.
Right.
And she said Sebula sounded better, so that's it. And all across Illinois, the accent is on the first syllable. Milan, Rio, Athens, you name it.
Orion,
yeah. Yeah, it's and the French, Maridosia, Maridosier, Maridosier, Sea of Willows. Yeah, it's a fun way to spend your time. Let me recommend that to you as a hobby.
All right.
What can you recommend as a book?
Nan Carter sent me a book a while back. She's our contact in San Francisco, who's really busy reading African literature and Arabic literature. And this is one by a Lebanese writer named Raber Jaber, R-A-B-E-E-J-A-B-E-R. The book is called Confessions. It's written in the form of a memoir, although it really isn't. But here's the opening line. My father used to kill people.
That's a good opening line.
And it's the story of a young boy who, when he was too young to even know the difference, his family was killed by rebels in driving their car. He's the only one left alive. The leader of the rebels took him and adopted him as his son to replace the son that the rebel had lost in a similar battle earlier. And he doesn't find out until he's grown up that he's not really this man's son. And so the whole story becomes, whose son really is he? I mean, this son, this father has lavished attention on him, has raised him carefully, has given him, you know, whatever he wants and whatever he needs. Who's really the father?
Yeah.
The real father that was assassinated by the fake father or the fake father? And the way in which he handles this whole thing. It's a good portrait of what must be a terrible century for Lebanon. You know,
yeah.
Civil war after civil war after civil war.
Yeah, that land is just torn up completely. And even now, it amazes me, people go there for vacations. And I think, are you crazy?
Right.
But they do. And the wars and the tensions continue. There is simply no let up to that at all. Well, what is this book again?
Confessions.
Confession.
By a Lebanese writer whose last name is Jaber.
Jaber. You know, that's got to be tough to look at your father and know that he killed your real father.
Whom you don't remember.
Yeah, you have no knowledge of your family, which was wiped out by the man who loves you and cares for you. It's a strange world, I must say. But it's time for us to head for the exit here. I'm Don Woot with Roll Tweet. We hope you'll join us again next week for another session on Scribble.